gave her the amberoid necklace she broke, putting pieces of folded brown paper in the letterbox for her. He smiled, pouring. "Oh, Millie Bloom, you are my darling, you are my looking glass from night to morning. I'd rather have you without a farthing than Katie Kyo with her ass and garden." Poor old Professor Goodwin. Dreadful old case. Still, he was a courteous old chap. Old-fashioned way, he used to bow Molly off the platform. And the little mirror in his silk hat. The night Millie brought it into the parlour. "Oh, look what I found in Professor Goodwin's hat." All we laughed. Sex breaking out even then. Pert little piece she was. He potted a fork into the kidney and slapped it over, then fitted the teapot on the tray. Its hump bumped as he took it up. Everything on it? Bread and butter, four sugar, spoon, her cream, yes. He carried it upstairs, his thumb hooked in the teapot handle. Nudging the door open with his knee, he carried the tray in and set it on the chair by the bedhead.
"What a time you were."
She set the brasses jingling as she raised herself briskly, an elbow on the pillow. He looked calmly down on her bulk and between her large, soft bubs, sloping within her nightdress like a she-goat's udder. The warmth of her couch body rose on the air, mingling with the fragrance of the tea she poured. A strip of torn envelope peeped from under the dimpled pillow. In the act of going, he stayed to straighten the bedspread. "Who is the letter from?" he asked. Bold hand, Marion.
"Oh, Boylan. He's bringing the programme."
"What are you singing?"
"La Chidarem with J.C. Doyle and Love's Old Sweet Song."
Her full lips, drinking, smiled. Rather stale smell that incense leaves next day, like foul flower water. "Would you like the window open a little?" She doubled a slice of bread into her mouth, asking,
"What time is the funeral?"
11, I think, he answered. "I didn't see the paper." Following the pointing of her finger, he took up a leg of her soiled drawers from the bed. No? Then a twisted grey garter looped round a stocking, rumpled, shiny sole.
"No, that book."
Other stocking, her petticoat.
"It must have fell down."
He felt here and there. "Volio et non vere." Wonder if she pronounces that right, volio. "Not in the bed. Must have slid down." He stooped and lifted the valance. The book, fallen, sprawled against the bulge of the orange-keyed chamber pot.
"Show here. I put a mark on it. There's a word I want to ask you."
She swallowed a draught of tea from her cup, held by knot handle, and having wiped her fingers smartly on the blanket, began to search the text with the hairpin till she reached the word. "Met him what?" he asked.
"Here. What does that mean?"
He leaned downwards and read near her polished thumbnail, "Metempsychosis."
"Yes. Who's he when he's at home?"
"Metempsychosis," he said, frowning. "It's Greek, from the Greek. That means the transmigration of souls."
"Oh, rocks, tell us in plain words."
He smiled, glancing askance at her mocking eye. The same young eyes. The first night after the charades, Dolphin's Barn. He turned over the smudged pages. Ruby, the pride of the ring. Hello? Illustration. Fierce Italian with carriage whip. Must be Ruby, pride of the, on the floor naked. Sheet kindly lent. The monster Maffei desisted and flung his victim from him with an oath. Cruelty behind it all. Doped animals. Trapeze and hanglers. Had to look the other way. Mob gaping. Break your neck and we break our sides. Families of them. Boned them young so they metempsychosis. That we live after death, our souls, that a man's soul, after he dies. Dignam's soul. Did you finish it? He asked.
Yes. There's nothing smutty in it. Is she in love with the first fellow all the time?
Never read it. Do you want another?
Yes. Get another of Paul de Kock's. Nice name he has.
She poured more tea into her cup, watching its flow sideways. Must get that Capel Street library book renewed, or they'll write to Kearney, my guarantor. Reincarnation. That's the word. Some people believe, he said, that we go on living in another body after death, that we live before. They call it reincarnation. That we all live before, on the earth, thousands of years ago, or some other planet. They say we've forgotten it. Some say they remember their past lives. The sluggish cream wound curdling spirals through her tea. better reminder of the word, metempsychosis. An example would be better. An example. The bath of the nymph over the bed. Given away with the Easter number of photo bits. Splendid masterpiece and art colours. Tea before you put milk in. Not unlike her, with her hair down. Slimmer. 3 and 6 I gave for the frame. She said it would look nice over the bed. Naked nymphs. Greece. And, for instance, all the people that lived then. He turned the pages back. Metempsychosis, he said, is what the ancient Greeks called it. They used to believe you could be changed into an animal, or a tree, for instance, what they called nymphs, for example. Her spoon ceased to stir up the sugar. She gazed straight before her, inhaling through her arched nostrils.
There's a smell of burn. Did you leave anything on the fire?
The kidney, he cried suddenly. He fitted the book roughly into his inner pocket and, stubbing his toes against the broken commode, hurried out towards the smell, stepping hastily down the stairs with a flurried stork's legs. Pungent smoke shot up in an angry jet from a side of the pan. By prodding a prong of the fork under the kidney, he detached it and turned a turtle on his back. Only a little burned. He tossed it off the pan onto a plate and let the scanty brown gravy trickle over it. Cup of tea now. He sat down, cut and buttered a slice of the loaf. He shore away the burnt flesh and flung it to the cat. Then he put a forkful into his mouth, chewing with discernment the toothsome, pliant meat. Done to a turn. Mouthful of tea. Then he cut away dies of bread, sopped one in the gravy, and put it in his mouth. What was that about some young student and a picnic? He creased out the letter at his side, reading it slowly as he chewed, sopping another die of bread in the gravy, and raising it to his mouth. Dearest Papley, thanks ever so much for the lovely birthday present. It suits me splendid. Everyone says I'm quite the belle in my new tam. I got Mummy's lovely box of creams, and I'm writing. They are lovely. I am getting on swimming in the photo business now. Mr. Coughlin took one of me and Mrs. We'll send when developed. We did great biz yesterday. Fair day and all the beef to the heels were in. We're going to Loch Owl on Monday with a few friends to make a scrap picnic. Give my love to Mummy and to yourself a big kiss and thanks. I hear them at the piano downstairs. There's to be a concert in the Greville Arms on Saturday. There is a young student comes here some evenings named Bannon. His cousins are something, are big swells. He sings Boylan's... I was on the popper writing Blazes Boylan's song about those seaside girls. Tell him Silly Millie sends my best respects. Must now close with fondest love, your fond daughter, Millie. P.S. Excuse bad writing. Am in hurry. Bye-bye. M. 15 yesterday. Curious. 15th of the month, too. Her first birthday away from home. Separation. Remember the summer morning she was born, running to knock up Mrs. Thornton in Denzil Street? Jolly old woman. Lots of babies she must have helped into the world. She knew from the first poor little Rudy wouldn't live. Well, God is good, sir. She knew at once. He would be 11 now, if he'd lived. His vacant face stared pitying at the postscript. Excuse bad writing. Hurry, piano downstairs. Coming out of her shell. Row with her in the XL cafe about the bracelet. Wouldn't eat her cakes or speak or look. Saucebox. He sopped other dyes of bread in the gravy and ate piece after piece of kidney. 12 and 6 a week? Not much still. She might do worse. Music hall stage, young student. He drank a draught of cooler tea to wash down his meal. Then he read the letter again. Twice. Oh, well, she knows how to mind herself. But if not... No, nothing has happened. Of course it might. Wait in any case till it does. A wild piece of goods, her slim legs running up the staircase. Destiny, ripening now. Vain. Very. He smiled with troubled affection at the kitchen window. Day I caught her in the street, pinching her cheeks to make them red. Anemic a little. Was given milk too long. On the errands king that day, round the kish, damned old tub pitching about, not a bit funky, her pale blue scarf loose in the wind with her hair. All dimpled cheeks and curls, your head it simply swirls. Seaside girls, torn envelope, hands stuck in his trousers pocket, Jarvie off for the day, singing, friend of the family, swirls, he says. Pier with lamps, summer evening band, Those girls, those girls, those lovely seaside girls. Millie too. Young kisses. The first. Far away now, past. Mrs. Marion. Reading, lying back now, counting the strands of her hair. Smiling. Braiding. A soft qualm, regret, flowed down his backbone. Increasing. Will happen, yes. Prevent, useless. Can't move. Girl's sweet, light lips. Will happen, too. He felt the flowing qualm spread over him. Useless to move now. Lips kissed, kissing, kissed. Full, gluey, woman's lips. Better where she is down there, away. Occupy her. Wanted a dog to pass the time. Might take a trip down there, August bank holiday. Only 2 and 6 return. 6 weeks off, however. Might work a press pass, or through McCoy. The cat, having cleaned all her fur, returned to the meat-stained paper, nosed at it, and stalked to the door. She looked back at him, mewing. Wants to go out. Wait before a door. Sometime it will open. Let her wait. Has the fidgets. Electric. Thunder in the air. Was washing at her ear with her back to the fire, too. He felt heavy. Full. Then a gentle loosening of his bowels. He stood up, undoing the waistband of his trousers. The cat mewed to him.
Meow,
he said in answer.
Wait till I'm ready.
Heaviness. Hot day coming. Too much trouble to fag up the stairs to the landing. A paper. He liked to read at stool. Hope no ape comes knocking just as I'm... In the table drawer, he found an old number of titbits. He folded it under his armpit, went to the door, and opened it. The cat went up in soft bounds. Ah, wanted to go upstairs, curl up in a ball on the bed. Listening, he heard her voice.
Come, come, pussy, come.
He went out through the back door into the garden, stood to listen towards the next garden. No sound. Perhaps hanging clothes out to dry. The maid was in the garden. Fine morning. He bent down to regard a lean file of spearmint growing by the wall. Make a summer house here. Scarlet runners, Virginia creepers. Want to manure the whole place over. Scabby soil. A coat of liver of sulphur. All soil like that, without dung. Household slops. Loam. What is this that is? The hens in the next garden. Their droppings are very good top dressing. Best of all, though, are the cattle, especially when they are fed on those oil cakes. Mulch of dung. Best thing to clean ladies' kid loves. Dirty cleans. Ashes, too. Reclaim the whole place. Grow peas in that corner there. Lettuce. Always have fresh greens then. Still, gardens have their drawbacks. That beer or blue bottle here, Whit Monday. He walked on. Where is my hat, by the way? Must have put it back on the peg, or hanging up on the floor. Funny, I don't remember that. Hall stand too full, 4 umbrellas, her rain cloak, picking up the letters. Drago's shop bell ringing. Queer, I was just thinking that moment. Brown, brilliantined hair over his collar. Just had a wash and brush up. Wonder if I had time for a bath this morning. Tara Street. Chap in the pay box there. Got away James Stevens, they say. O'Brien. Deep voice that fella Lucas has. Agendar, what is it? Now, my miss. Enthusiast. He kicked open the crazy door of the Jacks. Better be careful not to get these trousers dirty for the funeral. He went in, bowing his head under the low lintel. Leaving the door ajar, amid the stench of mouldy lime wash and stale cobwebs, he undid his braces. Before sitting down, he peered through a chink up at the next door window. The king was in his counting house. Nobody. A squat on the cockstool, he folded out his paper, turning his pages over on his bared knees. Something new and easy. No great hurry. Keep it a bit. A prize titbit. Machem's Masterstroke, written by Mr. Philip Beaufoy, Playgoers Club, London. Payment at the rate of 1 guinea a column has been made to the writer. 3.5, £3.03, £3.13 and 6. Quietly he read, restraining himself, the first column, and yielding, but resisting, began the second. Midway, his last resistance yielding, he allowed his bowels to ease themselves quietly as he read. reading still patiently, that slight constipation of yesterday quite gone. Hope it's not too big, bring on piles again. No, just right. So, cost of one tablet at Cascara Sagrada. Life might be so. It did not move or touch him, but it was something quick and neat. Print anything now. Silly season. He read on, seated calm, above his own rising smell. Neat, certainly. Machem often thinks of the masterstroke by which he won the laughing witch who now, begins and ends morally, hand in hand. Smart. He glanced back through what he had read, and while feeling his water flow quietly, he envied kindly Mr. Beaufoy, who had written it and received payment of £3.13 and 6. Might manage a sketch by Mr. and Mrs. L. M. Bloom. Invent a story for some proverb, which... Tommy used to try jotting down on my cuff what she said dressing. Dislike dressing together. Nicked myself shaving. Biting her nether lip, hooking the placket of her skirt. Timing her. 9:15. Did Roberts pay her yet? 9:20. What had Greta Conroy on? 9:23. What possessed me to buy this comb? 9:24. I'm swelled after that cabbage. A speck of dust on the patent leather of her boot. Rubbing smartly in turn each welt against her stocking calf. Morning after the bizarre dance, when May's band played Ponchielli's Dance of the Hours. Explain that morning hours, noon, then evening coming on, then night hours. Washing her teeth. That was the first night. Her head dancing, her fan sticks clicking. Is that boiling well off? He has money. Why? I noticed he had a good smell off his breath dancing. No use humming then. Allude to it. Strange kind of music that last night. The mirror was in shadow. She rubbed her hand-glass briskly on her woolen vest against her full, wagging bub, peering into it. Lines in her eyes. It wouldn't pan out somehow. Evening hours, girls in grey gauze. Night hours, then black with daggers and eye masks. Poetical idea, pink, then golden, then grey, then black. Still, true to life also. Day, then the night. He tore away half the prize story sharply and wiped himself with it. Then he girded up his trousers, braced and buttoned himself. He pulled back the jerky, shaky door of the jacks and came forth from the gloom into the air. In the bright light, lightened and cooled in limb, he eyed carefully his black trousers, the ends, the knees, the hocks of the knees. What time is the funeral? Better find out in the paper. A creak and a dark whir in the air high up. The bells of George's church. They tolled the hour, loud, dark, iron. Hey-ho, 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 hey-ho. 1:45. There again, the overtone following through the air. 3rd. Poor Dignam. By Lurie's, along Sir John Rogerson's quay, Mr. Bloom walked soberly, past Windmill Lane, Leask's, the linseed crushers, the postal telegraph office, could have given that address too, and past the sailor's home. He turned from the morning noises of the quayside and walked through Lime Street. By Brady's cottages, a boy for the skins lolled, his bucket of offal linked, smoking a chewed fagbutt. A smaller girl with scars of eczema on her forehead eyed him listlessly, holding her battered cask hoop. Tell him if he smokes he won't grow. Oh, let him. His life isn't such a bed of roses, waiting outside pubs to bring Da home. Come home to Ma, Da. Slackar. Won't be many there. He crossed Townsend Street, past the frowning face of Bethel. L, yes, house of, Aleph, Beth. And past Nichols, the undertaker's. At 11, it is. Time enough. Dare say Corny Kelleher bagged that job for O'Neill's, singing with his eyes shut. Corny. Met her once in the park, in the dark. What a lark. Police tout. Her name and address she then told him, with my tirilim tirilim tay. Oh, surely he bagged it. Bury him cheap in a whatchamacall, with my tirilim 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 tirilim. In Westland Row, he halted before the window of the Belfast and Oriental Tea Company and read the legends of lead-papered packets. Choice blend. Finest quality family tea. Rather warm. Tea. Must get some from Tom Karenin. Couldn't ask him at a funeral, though. While his eyes still read blandly, he took off his hat, quietly inhaling his hair oil, and set his right hand with slow grace over his brow and hair. Very warm morning. Under their dropped lids, his eyes found the tiny bow of the leather headband inside his high-grade hat. Just there. His right hand came down into the bowl of his hat. His fingers found quickly a card behind the headband and transferred it to his waistcoat pocket. So warm. His right hand once more slowly, went over again. Choice blend, made of the finest Ceylon brands. The Far East. Lovely spot it must be. The garden of the world, big, lazy leaves to float about on, cactuses, flowery meads. Snaky lianas, they call them. Wonder is it like that? Those Cingalese lobbing about in the sun in dolce far niente. Not doing a hand's turn all day. Sleep 6 months out of 12. Too hot to quarrel. Influence of the climate. Lethargy. Flowers of idleness. The air feeds most. Azotes. Hothouse and botanic gardens. Sensitive plants. Water lilies. Petals too tired to... Sleeping sickness in the air. Walk on rose leaves. Imagine trying to eat tripe and cow heel. Where was that chap I saw in that picture somewhere? Ah, in the Dead Sea, floating on his back, reading a book with a parasol open. Couldn't sink if you tried. So thick with salt. Because the weight of the water... No, the weight of the body in the water is equal to the weight of the... Or is it the volume is equal of the weight? It's a law, something like that. Vance in high school, cracking his finger joints, teaching... The college curriculum, cracking curriculum. What is weight, really? When you say the weight, 32 feet per second, law of falling bodies, per second, they all fall to the ground, the earth. It's the force of gravity of the earth is the weight. He turned away and sauntered across the road. How did she walk with her sausages? Like that, something. As he walked, he took the folded Freeman from his side pocket, unfolded it, rolled it lengthwise in a baton, and tapped it at each sauntering step against his trouser leg. Careless air. Just drop it and see. Per second, per second, per second for every second, it means. From the curbstone, he darted a keen glance through the door of the post office. Too late, box. Post here. No one. In. He handed the card through the brass grill. "Are there any letters for me?" he asked. While the postmistress searched a pigeonhole, he gazed at the recruiting poster with soldiers of all arms on parade, and held the tip of his baton against his nostrils, smelling fresh-printed rag paper. No answer, probably. Went too far last time. The postmistress handed him back through the grill his card with a letter. He thanked and glanced rapidly at the typed envelope. Henry Flower, Esquire, care of P.O., Westland Row, City. Answered, anyhow. He slipped card and letter into his side pocket, reviewing again the soldiers on parade. "Where's old Tweedy's regiment?" "Cast-off soldier." "There, bearskin cap and hackle plume." "No, he's a grenadier. Pointed cuffs." "There he is. Royal Dublin Fusiliers. Redcoats." "Too showy." "That must be why the women go after them." "Uniform." "Easier to enlist and drill." Maud Gaughan's letter about taking them off O'Connell Street at night. Disgrace to our Irish capital. Griffith's paper is on the same tack now. An army rotten with venereal disease, overseas or half-seas over empire. Half-baked they look. Hypnotized-like. Eyes front, mark, time, table, able, bed, ed, the king's own. Never see him dressed up as a fireman or a bobby. A mason, yes. He strolled out of the post office and turned to the right. Talk. As if that would mend matters. His hand went into his pocket, and a forefinger felt its way under the flap of the envelope, ripping it open in jerks. Women will pay a lot of heed, I don't think. His fingers drew forth the letter and crumpled the envelope in his pocket. Something pinned on. Photo, perhaps. Hair? No. McCoy. Get rid of him quickly. Take me out of my way. Hate company when you're... Hello, Bloom! Where are you, Walter? Hello, McCoy. Nowhere in particular. How's the body? Fine. How are you? Just keeping alive, McCoy said. His eyes on the black tie and clothes, he asked with low respect, Is there any... no trouble, I hope? I see you're... Oh, no, Mr. Bloom said. Poor Dignam, you know. The funeral is today. To be sure, poor fella, so it is. What time? A photo, it isn't. A badge, maybe. 11, Mr. Bloom answered. I must try to get out there, McCoy said. 11, is it? I only heard it last night. Who was telling me? Holohan. You know, Hoppy. I know. Mr. Bloom gazed across the road at the outsider drawn up before the door of the Grosvenor. The porter hoisted the valise up on the well. She stood still, waiting, while the man, husband, brother, like her, searched his pockets for change. Stylish kind of coat with that rolled collar. Warm for a day like this. Looks like blanket cloth. Careless standover with her hands in those patch pockets, like that haughty creature at the polo match. Women all for caste till you touch the spot. Handsome is and handsome does. Reserved, about to yield. The Honourable Mrs. and Brutus is an honourable man. Possess her once, take the starch out of her. I was with Bob Doran, he's on one of his periodical bends, and what do you call them, bantam lions, just down there in Conway's we were. Doran Lyons in Conway's. She raised a gloved hand to her hair. In came Hoppy, having a wet. Drawing back his head and gazing far from beneath his veiled eyelids, he saw the bright fawn skin shine in the glare, the braided drums. Clearly I can see today. Moisture about gives long sight, perhaps. Talking of one thing or another. Lady's hand. Which side will she get up? And he said, sad thing about our poor friend Paddy. What Paddy, I said? Poor little Paddy Dignam, he said. Off to the country. Broadstone, probably. High brown boots with laces dangling. Well-turned foot. What is he foosted and over that change for? Sees me looking? Eye out for the other fella always. Good fallback. Two strings to a bow. Why, I said. What's wrong with him, I said. Proud, rich, silk stockings. Yes, Mr. Bloom said. He moved a little to the side of McCoy's talking head, getting up in a minute. What's wrong with him, he said. He's dead, he said. And fate, he filled up. Is it Paddy Dignam, I said. I couldn't believe it when I heard it. I was with him no later than Friday last, or Thursday, was it? In the arch, yes, he said. He's gone. He died on Monday, poor fellow. Watch, watch. Silk flash, rich stockings, white. Watch. A heavy tram car, honking its gong, slewed between. Lost it. Curse your noisy pug-nose. Fields locked out of it. Paradise and the peri... Always happening like that. The very moment. Girl in Eustace Street hallway. Monday, was it? Settling her garter. Her friend covering the display of esprit de corps. Well, what are you gaping at? Yes, yes, Mr. Bloom said, after a dull sigh. Another gone. One of the best, McCoy said. The tram passed. They drove off toward the Loopline Bridge, her rich gloved hand on the steel grip. Flicker, flicker, the lace flare of her hat in the sun. Flicker, flick. Wife well, I suppose? McCoy's changed voice said. Oh, yes, Mr. Bloom said. Tip-top, thanks. He unrolled the newspaper baton idly, and read idly, What is home without plum trees, potted meat? Incomplete. With it, an abode of bliss. My missus has just got an engagement. At least it's not settled yet. Valise tack again. By the way, no harm. I'm off that, thanks. Mr. Bloom turned his large-lidded eyes with unhasty friendliness. My wife, too, he said. She's going to sing at a swagger affair in the Ulster Hall, Belfast, on the 25th. That's so, McCoy said. Glad to hear that, old man. Who's getting it up? Mrs. Marion Bloom. Not up yet. Queen was in her bedroom, eating bread and... No book. Blackened court cards laid along her thigh by sevens. Dark lady and fair man. Cat, furry black ball. Torn strip of envelope. Love's old sweet song. Comes love's old... It's a kind of tour, don't you see? Mr. Bloom said thoughtfully. Sweet song. There's a committee formed, part chairs and part profits. McCoy nodded, picking at his moustache stubble. Oh, well, he said, that's good news. He moved to go. Well, glad to see you looking fit, he said. Meet you knocking around. Yes, Mr. Bloom said. Tell you what, McCoy said. You might put down my name at the funeral, will you? I'd like to go, but I mightn't be able, you see. There's a drowning case that Sandy Cove may turn up, and then the coroner and myself would have to go down if the body's found. You just shove in my name if I'm not there, will you? I'll do that, Mr. Bloom said, moving to get off. That'll be all right. Right, McCoy said brightly. Thanks, old man. I'd go if I possibly could. Well, tell all, just as C.P. McCoy will do. That will be done, Mr. Bloom answered firmly. Didn't catch me napping that wheeze. That quick touch. Soft mark. I'd like my job. Felice I have a particular fancy for. Leather. Capped corners, riveted edges, double-action lever lock. Bob Cowley lent him his for the Wicklow Regatta concert last year, and never heard tidings of it from that good day to this. Mr. Bloom, strolling towards Brunswick Street, smiled. My missus has just got an reedy freckle soprano, cheese-paring nose. Nice enough in its way for a little ballad. No guts in it. You and me, don't you know, in the same boat. Soft-soaping. Give you the needle, that would. Can't he hear the difference? Think he's that way inclined a bit. Against my grain, somehow. Thought that Belfast would fetch him. I hope that smallpox up there doesn't get worse. Suppose she wouldn't let herself be vaccinated again. Your wife and my wife. Wonder is he pimping after me? Mr. Bloom stood at the corner, his eyes wandering over the multicoloured hoardings. Cantrell and Cochrane's ginger ale, aromatic. Cleary's summer sale. No, he's going on straight. Hello. Leah tonight. Mrs. Banman Palmer. Like to see her in that again. Hamlet she played last night. Male impersonator. Perhaps he was a woman. Why Ophelia committed suicide. Poor Papa. How we used to talk about Kate Bateman in that. Outside the Adelphi in London. Waited all the afternoon to get in. Year before I was born, that was. 65. And Ristery in Vienna. What is this the right name is? By Mosenthal it is. Rachel, is it? No. The scene he was always talking about, where the old blind Abraham recognizes the voice and puts his fingers on his face. Nathan's voice, his son's voice. I hear the voice of Nathan, who left his father to die of grief and misery in my arms, who left the house of his father and left the God of his father. Every word is so deep, Leopold. Poor Papa. Poor man. I'm glad I didn't go into the room to look at his face that day. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Phew. Well, perhaps it was the best for him. Mr. Bloom went round the corner and passed the drooping nags of the hazard. No use thinking of it any more. Nosebag time. Wish I hadn't met that McCoy fella. He came nearer and heard a crunching of gilded oats, the gently champing teeth. Their full buck eyes regarded him as he went by, amid the sweet oaten reek of horse piss. Their Eldorado. Poor jugginses. Damn all they know or care about anything with their long noses stuck in nosebags. Too full for words. Still, they get their feed all right and their doss. Gelded, too. The stump of black gutta-percha, wagging limp between their haunches. Might be happy all the same that way. Good poor brutes they look. Still, their neigh can be very irritating. He drew the letter from his pocket and folded it into the newspaper he carried. Might just walk into her here. The lane is safer. He passed the cabman's shelter. Curious the life of drifting cabbies, all weathers, all places, time or set down, no will of their own. Volio e non. Like to give them an odd cigarette. Sociable. Shout a few flying syllables as they pass. He hummed. La ci darem la mano. La 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 la. He turned into Cumberland Street, and going on some paces, halted in the lee of the station wall. No one. Meade's timber yard. Piled balks, ruins and tenements. With careful tread, he passed over a hopscotch court with its forgotten picky stone. Not a sinner. Near the timber yard, a squatted child at marbles alone, shooting the tor with a cunny thumb. A wise tabby, a blinking sphinx, watched from her warm sill. Pity to disturb them. Muhammad cut a piece out of his mantle, not to wake her. Open it. And once I played marbles, when I went to that old dame's school. She liked Mignonette, Mrs. Ellis's, and Mr. He opened the letter within the newspaper. A flower? I think it's a yellow flower with flattened petals. Not annoyed, then. What does she say? Dear Henry, I got your last letter to me, and thank you very much for it. I am sorry you did not like my last letter. Why did you enclose the stamps? I am awfully angry with you. I do wish I could punish you for that. I called you naughty boy because I do not like that other word. Please tell me what is the real meaning of that word. Are you not happy in your home, you poor little naughty boy? I do wish I could do something for you. Please tell me what you think of poor me. I often think of the beautiful name you have. Dear Henry, when will we meet? I think of you so often, you have no idea. I have never felt myself so much drawn to a man as you. I feel so bad about. Please write me a long letter and tell me more. Remember, if you do not, I will punish you. So now you know what I will do to you, you naughty boy, if you do not write. Oh, how I long to meet you. Henry, dear, do not deny my request before my patience are exhausted. Then I will tell you all. Goodbye now, naughty darling. I have such a bad headache today, and write by return to your longing, Martha. P.S. Do tell me what kind of perfume does your wife use. I want to know. He tore the flower gravely from his pinhold, smelt its almost no smell, and placed it in his heart pocket. Language of flowers, they like it because no one can hear. Or a poisoned bouquet to strike them down. Then, walking slowly forward, he read the letter again, murmuring here and there a word. Angry tulips, with you, darling, manflower. Punish your cactus, if you don't please, poor forget-me-not. How I long, violets to dear roses, when we soon an enemy meet all naughty nightstalk, wife Martha's perfume. Having read it all, he took it from the newspaper and put it back in his side pocket. Weak joy opened his lips. Changed since the first letter. Wonder did she write it herself? Doing the indignant, a girl of good family like me, respectable character. Could meet one Sunday after the rosary. Thank you, not having any. Usual love scrimmage, then running round corners. Bad as a row with Molly. Cigar has a cooling effect. Narcotic. Go further next time. Naughty boy. Punish. Afraid of words, of course. Brutal. Why not? Try it anyhow. A bit at a time. Fingering still the letter in his pocket, he drew the pin out of it. Common pin, eh? He threw it on the road. Out of her clothes somewhere, pinned together. Queer the number of pins they always have. No roses without thorns. Flat Dublin voices bawled in his head. Those two sluts that night in the coombe, linked together in the rain. Oh, Mary lost the pin of her drawer. She didn't know what to do. To keep it up, to keep it up. It? Them? Such a bad headache. Has her roses, probably. Or sitting all day typing. Eye focus bad for stomach nerves. What perfume does your wife use? Now, could you make out a thing like that? To keep it up. Martha, Mary, I saw that picture somewhere. I forget now. Old master or faked for money. He's sitting in their house talking. Mysterious. Also the two sluts in the groom would listen. To keep it up. Nice kind of evening feeling. No more wandering about. Just loll there, quiet, dusk. Let everything rip. Forget. Tell about places you've been, strange customs. The other one, jar on her head, was getting the supper. Fruit, olives, lovely cool water out of the well, stone cold, like the hole in the wall at Ashdown. Must carry a paper goblet next time I go to the trotting matches. She listens with big, dark, soft eyes. Tell her more and more, all. Then a sigh, silence, long, long, long rest. Going under the railway arch, he took out the envelope, tore it swiftly in shreds, and scattered them towards the road. The shreds fluttered away, sank in the dank air. A white flutter, then all sank. Henry Flower. You could tear up a cheque for £100 in the same way. Simple bit of paper. Lord Ivy once cashed a seven-figure cheque for £1 million in the Bank of Ireland. Shows you the money to be made out of porter. Still the other brother, Lord Ardilon, has to change his shirt 4 times a day, they say. Skin breeds lice or vermin. £1 million. Wait a moment. 2 pence a pint, 4 pence a quart, 8 pence a gallon of porter. No, 1 and 4 pence a gallon of porter. 1 and 4 into 20, 15 about. Yes, exactly. 15 millions of barrels of porter. What am I saying, barrels? Gallons. About 1 million barrels, all the same. An incoming train clanked heavily above his head, coach after coach. Barrels bumped in his head. Dull porter slopped and churned inside. The bunghole sprang open, and a huge dull flood leaked out, flowing together, winding through mudflats all over the level land, a lazy, pooling swirl of liquor bearing along wide-leaved flowers of its froth. He had reached the open back door of All Hallows. Stepping into the porch, he doffed his hat, took the card from his pocket, and tucked it again behind the leather headband. Damn it. I might have tried to work McCoy for a pass to Mullingar. Same notice on the door. Sermon by the very Reverend John Conmee, S.J., on St. Peter Claver and the African Mission. Save China's millions. Wonder how they explain it to the heathen Chinee. Prefer an ounce of opium. Celestials. Rank heresy for them. Prayers for the conversion of Gladstone they had, too, when he was almost unconscious. The Protestants the same. Convert Dr. William J. Walsh, D.D., to the true religion. Buddha, their god, lying on his side in the museum, taking it easy with hand under his cheek. Joss sticks burning. Not like Ecce Homo. Crown of thorns and cross. Clever idea, St. Patrick the Shamrock. Chopsticks. Con me. Martin Cunningham knows him. Distinguished looking. Sorry I didn't work him about getting Molly into the choir instead of that Father Farley, who looked a fool, but wasn't. They're taught that. He's not going out in bluey specs with the sweat rolling off him to baptize blacks, is he? The glasses would take their fancy, flashing. Like to see them sitting round in a ring with blub lips, entranced, listening. Still life. Lap it up like milk, I suppose. The cold smell of sacred stone called him. He trod the worn steps, pushed the swing door, and entered softly by the rear. Something going on. Some sodality. Pity it's so empty. Nice discreet place to be next some girl, who was my neighbour, jammed by the hour to slow music. That woman at midnight mass. Seventh heaven. Women knelt in the benches, with crimson halters round their necks, heads bowed. A batch knelt at the altar rails. The priest went along by them, murmuring, holding the thing in his hands. He stopped at each, took out a communion, shook a drop or two. Are they in water? Offered, and put it neatly into her mouth. Her hat and head sank, then the next one, the small old woman. The priest bent down to put it into her mouth, murmuring all the time. Latin. The next one. Shut your eyes and open your mouth. What? Corpus. Body. Corpse. Good idea, the Latin. Stupefies them first. Hospice for the dying. They don't seem to chew it. Only swallow it down. Rum idea. Eating bits of a corpse. Why the cannibals cotton to it? He stood aside, watching their blind masks pass down the aisle, one by one, and seek their places. He approached a bench, and seated himself in his corner, nursing his hat and newspaper. These pots we have to wear. We ought to have hats modelled on our heads. They were about him here and there, with heads still bowed in their crimson halters, waiting for it to melt in their stomachs. Something like those mazuth. It's that sort of bread. Unleavened shrew bread. Look at them. Now, I bet it makes them feel happy. Lollipop. It does. Yes, bread of angels, it's called. There's a big idea behind it. Kind of kingdom of God is within you, feel. First communicants, hokey-pokey penny a lump. Then feel all like one family party. Same at the theatre. All in the same swim. They do, I'm sure of that. Not so lonely. In our confraternity. Then come out a big spree-ish. Let off steam. Thing is, if you really believe in it. Lourdes cure, waters of oblivion, and the knock apparition, statues bleeding. Old fellow asleep near that confession box. Hence those snores. Blind faith. Safe in the arms of kingdom come, lulls all pain. Wake this time next year. He saw the priest stow the communion cup away, well in, and kneel an instant before it, showing a large grey boot sole from under the lace affair he had on. Suppose he lost the pin of his. He wouldn't know what to do. Bald spot behind. Letters on his back. I-N-R-I? No. I-H-S. Molly told me one time, I asked her, I have sinned. Or no, I have suffered, it is. And the other one, iron nails ran in. Meet one Sunday, after the rosary. Do not deny my request. Turn up with the veil and black bag. Dusk and the light behind her. She might be here with the ribbon round her neck, and do the other thing all the same on the sly. Their character. That fellow that turned Queen's evidence on the Invincibles, he used to receive the... Carey was his name, the communion, every morning. This very church. Peter Carey, no, Peter Claver I'm thinking of. Dennis Carey. And just imagine that. Wife and 6 children at home, and plotting that murder all the time. Those craw thumpers, now that's a good name for them. There's always something shifty looking about them. They're not straight men of business either. Oh, no, she's not here. The flower? No, no. By the way, did I tear up that envelope? Yes, under the bridge. The priest was rinsing out the chalice. Then he tossed off the dregs smartly. Wine. Makes it more aristocratic than, for example, if you drank what they used to, Guinness's porter, or some temperance beverage, Wheatley's Dublin hop bitters, or Cantrell and Cochrane's ginger ale, aromatic. Doesn't give them any of it. Show wine. Only the other. Cold comfort. Pious fraud, but quite right. Otherwise, they'd have one ale boozer worse than another coming along, catching for a drink. Queer, the whole atmosphere of the... Quite right. Perfectly right, that is. Mr. Bloom looked back towards the choir. Not going to be any music. Pity. Who has the organ here, I wonder? Old Lynn. He knew how to make that instrument talk. The vibrato. £50 a year, they say he had in Gardiner Street. Molly was in fine voice that day. The Stabat Mater of Rossini. Father Bernard Vaughan's sermon first. Christ or Pilate. Christ, but don't keep us all night over it. Music they wanted. Foot drill stopped. Could hear a pin drop. I told it to pitch her voice against that corner. I could feel the thrill in the air, the full, the people looking up. Quis est homo? Some of that old sacred music is splendid. Mercadante, 7 last words. Mozart's 12th Mass. The gloria in that. Those old popes were keen on music, on art and statues and pictures of all kinds. Palestrina, for example, too. They had a gay old time while it lasted. Healthy, too, chanting, regular hours, then brew liqueurs, Benedictine, green chartreuse. Still, having eunuchs in their choir, that was coming at a bit thick. What kind of voice is it? Must be curious to hear after their own strong basses, connoisseurs. Suppose they wouldn't feel anything after. Kind of a placid, no worry. Fall into flesh, don't they? Gluttons, tall, long legs. Who knows? Eunuch. One way out of it. He saw the priest bend down and kiss the altar, and then face about and bless all the people. All crossed themselves and stood up. Mr. Bloom glanced about him and then stood up, looking over the risen hats. Stand up at the gospel, of course. Then all settled down on their knees again, and he sat back quietly in his bench. The priest came down from the altar, holding the thing out from him, and he and the mass boy answered each other in Latin. Then the priest knelt down and began to read off a card. O God, our refuge and our strength! Mr. Bloom put his face forward to catch the words. English? Throw them the bone. I remember slightly how long since your last mass, Gloria, Immaculate Virgin, Joseph, her spouse, Peter and Paul. More interesting, if you understood what it's all about. Wonderful organization, certainly. Goes like clockwork. Confession. Everyone wants to. Then I will tell you all. Penance. Punish me, please. Great weapon in their hands. More than doctor or solicitor. Woman dying to. And I just... And did you... And why did you... Look down at her ring to find an excuse. Whispering gallery walls have ears. Husband learned to his surprise. God's little joke. Then out she comes. Repentance, skin deep. Lovely shame. Pray at an altar. Hail Mary and Holy Mary. Flowers, incense, candles melting. Hide her blushes. Salvation Army, blatant imitation. Reformed prostitute will address the meeting. How I found the Lord. Square-headed chaps those must be in Rome. They work the whole show. And don't they rake in the money too? Bequests also. To the PP, for the time being, in his absolute discretion. Masses for the repose of my soul to be said publicly with open doors, monasteries and convents. The priest in the Fermanagh will case in the witness box. No browbeating him. He had his answer pat for everything. Liberty and exaltation of our Holy Mother the Church, the doctors of the Church. They mapped out the whole theology of it. The priest prayed, Blessed Michael, Archangel, defend us in the hour of conflict. Be our safeguard against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God restrain him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust Satan down to hell, and with him those other wicked spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. The priest and the mouse boy stood up and walked off. All over. The women remained behind, thanksgiving. Better be shoving along, Brother Buzz. Come around with a plate, perhaps. Pay your Easter duty. He stood up. Hello. Were those two buttons on my waistcoat open all the time? Women enjoy it. Annoyed if you don't. Why didn't you tell me before? Never tell you. But we, excuse me, there's just a fluff. Or their skirt behind, placket unhooked, glimpses of the moon. Still, like you better untidy. Good job it wasn't farther south. He passed, discreetly buttoning, down the aisle, and out through the main door, into the light. He stood a moment unseeing by the cold black marble bowl, while before him and behind two worshippers dipped furtive hands in the low tide of holy water. Trams, a car of Prescott's dyeworks, a widow in her weeds. Notice because I'm in mourning myself. He covered himself. How goes the time? 4:15. Time enough yet. Better get that lotion made up. Where is this? Ah, yes, the last time. Sweeney's in Lincoln Place. Chemists rarely move. Their green and gold beacon jars too heavy to stir. Hamilton Long's, founded in the year of the flood. Huguenot churchyard near there. Visit some day. He walked southward along Westland Row. But the recipe is in the other trousers. Oh, I forgot that latchkey, too. Bore, this funeral affair. Oh, well, poor fellow, it's not his fault. When was it I got it made up last? Wait, I changed a sovereign, I remember. First of the month it must have been, or the second. Oh, he can look it up in the prescriptions book. The chemist turned back page after page. Sandy, shriveled smell he seems to have. Shrunken skull, and old. Quest for the Philosopher's Stone. The alchemists. Drugs age you after mental excitement. Lethargy, then. Why? Reaction. A lifetime in a night. Gradually changes your character, living all the day among herbs, ointments, disinfectants, all his alabaster lily pots, mortar and pestle, ac, disc, fol, lor, te, virid. Smell almost cure you, like the dentist's doorbell. Doctor Whack. He ought to physic himself a bit. Electuary or emulsion. The first fellow that picked the herb to cure himself had a bit of pluck. Simples. Want to be careful. Enough stuff here to chloroform you. Test. Turns blue litmus paper red. Chloroform. Overdose of laudanum. Sleeping draughts. Love filters. Paregoric poppy syrup. Bad for cough. Clogs the pores or the phlegm. Poison's the only cures. Remedy where you least expect it. Clever of nature.
About a fortnight ago, sir.
Yes, Mr. Bloom said. He waited by the counter, inhaling the keen reek of drugs, the dusty dry smell of sponges and loofahs. Lot of time taken up telling your aches and pains. Sweet almond oil and tincture of benzoin, Mr. Bloom said, and then orange flower water. It certainly did make her skin so delicate, white, like wax. And white wax also, he said. Brings out the darkness of her eyes. Looking at me, the sheet up to her eyes, Spanish, smelling herself, when I was fixing the links in me cuffs. Those homely recipes are often the best. Strawberries for the teeth, nettles in rainwater, oatmeal, they say, steeped in buttermilk. Skin food. One of the old Queen's sons, Duke of Albany, was it, had only one skin. Leopold, yes. Three we have. Warts, bunions, and pimples to make it worse. But you want a perfume, too. What perfume does your Peau d'Espagne, that orange flower? Pure curd soap. Water is so fresh. Nice smell these soaps have. Time to get a bath round the corner. Hammam, Turkish, massage. Dirt gets rolled up in your navel. Nicer if a nice girl did it. Also, I think I... Yes, I... Do it in the bath. Curious longing, I... Water to water. Combine business with pleasure. Pity no time for massage. Feel fresh then all day. Funeral be rather glum.
Yes, sir, the chemist said. That was 2 in 9. Have you brought a bottle?
No, Mr. Bloom said. Make it up, please. I'll call later in the day, and I'll take one of those soaps. How much are they?
4 pence, sir.
Mr. Bloom raised a cake to his nostrils. Sweet, lemony wax. I'll take this one. he said. That makes 3 and a penny.
Yes, sir, the chemist said. You can pay all together, sir, when you come back.
Good, Mr. Bloom said. He strolled out of the shop, the newspaper baton under his armpit, the cool wrappered soap in his left hand. At his armpit, Bantam Lyon's voice and hand said, "Hello, Bloom. What's the best news? Is that today's? Show us a minute." Shaved off his moustache again, by Jove, long, cold upper lip, to look younger. He does look balmy, younger than I am. Bantam Lyon's yellow black-nailed fingers unroll the baton. Wants a wash, too. Take off the rough dirt. Good morning, have you used Pear soap? Dandruff on his shoulders. Scalp wants oiling.
I want to see about that French horse that's running today, Bantam Lyon said. Where the booger is it?
He rustled the pleated pages, jerking his chin on his high collar. Barber's itch. Tight collar, he loses hair. Better leave him the paper and get shut of him.
You can keep it, Mr. Bloom said. Ascot, Gold Cup, wait,
Bantam Lyon muttered. Half a mo. Maximum the second. I was just going to throw it away, Mr. Bloom said. Bantam Lyon raised his eyes suddenly and leered weakly.
What's that?
His sharp voice said.
I say you can keep it, Mr. Bloom answered. I was going to throw it away that moment.
Bantam Lyon doubted an instant, leering, then thrust the outspread sheets back on Mr. Bloom's arms.
I'll risk it, he said. Here, thanks.
He sped off towards Conway's corner. Godspeed, Scott. Mr. Bloom folded the sheets again to a neat square and lodged the soap in it, smiling. Silly lips of that chap. Betting. Regular hotbed of it lately. Messenger boy stealing to put on sixpence. Raffle for large tender turkey. Your Christmas dinner for threepence. Jack Fleming, embezzling to gamble, then smuggled off to America. Keeps a hotel now. They never come back. Flesh pots of Egypt. He walked cheerfully towards the Mosque of the Baths. Remind you of a mosque, red-baked bricks, the minarets. College sports today, I see. He eyed the horseshoe poster over the gate of College Park. Cyclists doubled up like a cod in a pot. Damn bad ad. Now, if they had made it round like a wheel, then the spokes, sport, sports, sports, and the hub, big, college. Something to catch the eye. There's Hornblower standing at the porter's lodge. Keep him on hand. Might take a turn in there on the nod.
How do you do, Mr. Hornblower? How do you do, sir?
Heavenly weather, really. If life was always like that. Cricket weather. Sit around under sunshades, over after over.
Out?
They can't play it here. Duck for 6 wickets. Still, Captain Buller broke a window of the Kildare Street Club with a slog to square leg. Donnybrook Fair more in their line. And the skulls we are a-cracking when McCarthy took the floor. Heat wave. Won't last. Always passing. The stream of life, which in the stream of life we trace, is dearer than them all. Enjoy a bath now. Clean trough of water, cool enamel, the gentle, tepid stream. This is my body. He foresaw his pale body reclined in it at full, naked, in a womb of warmth, oiled by scented melting soap, softly laved. He saw his trunk and limbs rip-rippled over and sustained, buoyed lightly upward, lemon yellow, his navel, bud of flesh, and saw the dark, tangled curls of his bush floating, floating hair of the stream, around the limp father of thousands, a languid, floating flower.
My pretty Jane, my pretty Jane, I'll never, never look so shy. But meet me, meet me in the evening, while the bloom is on the rise.
Martin Cunningham first poked his silk-hatted head into the creaking carriage and, entering deftly, seated himself. Mr. Power stepped in after him, curving his height with care.
"Come on, Simon."
"After you," Mr. Bloom said. Mr. Dedalus covered himself quickly and got in, saying,
"Yes, yes."
"Are we all here now?"
Martin Cunningham asked.
"Come along, Bloom."
Mr. Bloom entered and sat in the vacant place. He pulled the door to after him and slammed it tight till it shut tight. He passed an arm through the arm strap and looked seriously from the open carriage window at the lowered blinds of the avenue. One dragged aside, an old woman peeping, nose white flattened against the pane. Thanking her stars, she was passed over. Extraordinary the interest they take in a corpse. Glad to see us go. We give them such trouble coming. Job seems to suit them. Hugger-mugger in corners, stopper-about and slipper-slappers for fear he'd wake. Then, getting it ready, laying it out. Molly and Mrs. Fleming making the bed. Pull it more to your side. Our winding sheet. Never know who will touch you dead. Wash and shampoo. I believe they clip the nails and the hair. Keep a bit in an envelope. Grow all the same after. Unclean job. All waited. Nothing was said. Stowing in the reeds, probably. I'm sitting on something hard. That soap in my hip pocket. Better shift it out of that. Wait for an opportunity. All waited. Then wheels were heard from in front turning, then nearer, then horses' hoofs. A jolt. The carriage began to move, creaking and swaying. Other hoofs and creaking wheels started behind. The blinds of the avenue passed, and number 9, with its crepe knocker, door ajar, at walking pace. They waited still, their knees jogging, till they had turned and were passing along the tram tracks. Tritonville Road, quicker. The wheels rattled, rolling over the cobbled causeway, and the crazy glasses shook, rattling in the door frames. "What way is he taking us?" Mr. Parr asked, through both windows.
"Irish town," Martin Cunningham said. "Ringsend, Brunswick Street."
Mr. Dedalus nodded, looking out.
"That's a fine old custom," he said. "I'm glad to see it has not died out."
All watched a while through the windows, caps and hats lifted by passers. Respect. The carriage swerved from the tram track to the smoother road, past Watery Lane. Mr. Bloom, at gaze, saw a lithe young man clad in mourning, a wide hat.
"There's a friend of yours gone by, Dedalus," he said. "Who's that?"
"Your son and heir. Where is he?"
Mr. Dedalus said, stretching over across. The carriage, passing the open drains and mounds of ripped-up roadway before the tenement houses, lurched round the corner and, swerving back to the tram track, rolled on noisily with chattering wheels. Mr. Dedalus fell back, saying,
"Was that Mulligan cad with him? His feed is Arcati's?"
"No," Mr. Bloom said. "He was alone."
"Down with his Aunt Sally, I suppose," Mr. Dedalus said. "The Goulding faction, that drunken little costdrawer, and Chrissy, Papa's little lump of dung, the wise child that knows her own father."
Mr. Bloom smiled joylessly on Ringsend Road. Wallace Brothers, the bottle works, Dodder Bridge. Richie Goulding and the legal bag, Goulding, Collis and Ward, he calls the firm. His jokes are getting a bit damp. Great card he was, waltzing in Steimer Street, with Ignatius Gallagher on a Sunday morning, the landlady's two hats pinned on his head, out on the rampage all night. Beginning to tell on him now, that backache of his, I fear. Wife ironing his back. Thinks he'll cure it with pills. All breadcrumbs they are. About 600% profit.
"He's in with a low-down crowd," Mr. Dedalus snarled. "That Mulligan is the contaminated, bloody, double-eyed ruffian, by all accounts. His name stinks all over Dublin, but with the help of God and his blessed mother, I'll make it my business to write a letter one of these days to his mother or his aunt or whatever she is that'll open our eyes as wide as a gate. I'll tickle his catastrophe, believe you me."
He cried above the clatter of the wheels.
"I won't have her bastard of a nephew ruin my son, a counter-jumper son, selling tapes in my cousin Peter Paul McSweeney's? Not likely."
He ceased. Mr. Bloom glanced from his angry moustache to Mr. Parr's mild face, and Martin Cunningham's eyes and beard, gravely shaking. Noisy, self-willed man, full of his son. He's right. Something to hand on. If little Rudy had lived, see him grow up, hear his voice in the house, walking beside Molly in an Eton suit. My son, me in his eyes. Strange feeling it would be, from me. Just a chance. Must have been that morning in Raymond Terrace. She was at the window, watching the two dogs at it, by the wall of the Cease to Do Evil, and the sergeant grinning up. She had that cream gown on, with the rip she never stitched. Give us a touch, Poldie. God, I'm dying for it. How life begins. Got big then. Had to refuse the Greystones concert. My son inside her. I could have helped him on in life. I could make him independent. Learn German, too.
Are we late? Mr. Power asked.
10 minutes, Martin Cunningham said, looking at his watch.
Molly, Millie. Same thing, watered down. Her tomboy oaths. Oh, jumping Jupiter. Ye gods and little fishes. Still, she's a dear girl. Soon be a woman. Mullingar, dear as Papley. Young student. Yes. Yes. A woman, too. Life. Life.
The carriage heeled over and back, their four trunks swaying. Corny might have given us a more commodious yoke, Mr. Power said.
He might, Mr. Dedalus said, if he hadn't that squint troubling him. Do you follow me?
He closed his left eye. Martin Cunningham began to brush away crust crumbs from under his thighs.
What is this, he said, in the name of God? Crumbs?
Someone seems to have been making a picnic party here lately, Mr. Power said.
All raised their thighs, eyed with disfavour the mildewed buttonless leather of the seats. Mr. Dedalus, twisting his nose, frowned downward and said,
Unless I'm greatly mistaken. What do you think, Martin?
It struck me too, Martin Cunningham said. Mr. Bloom set his thigh down.
Glad I took that bath. Feel my feet quite clean. But I wish Mrs. Fleming had darned these socks better.
Mr. Dedalus sighed resignedly.
After all, he said, it's the most natural thing in the world.
Did Tom Kiernan turn up? Martin Cunningham asked, twirling the peak of his beard gently.
Yes, Mr. Bloom answered. He's behind with Ned Lambert and Hines.
And Corny Kelleher himself? Mr. Power asked.
At the cemetery, Martin Cunningham said.
I met McCoy this morning, Mr. Bloom said. He said he'd try to come.
The carriage halted short.
What's wrong?
We've stopped.
Where are we?
Mr. Bloom put his head out of the window.
The Grand Canal, he said.
Gasworks.
Whooping cough, they say it cures. Good job Millie never got it. Poor children. Doubles them up black and blue in convulsions. Shame, really. Got off lightly with illness compared. Only measles. Flaxseed tea. Scarlatina influenza epidemics. Canvassing for death. Don't miss this chance. Dog's home over there. Poor old Athos.
Be good to Athos, Leopold, is my last wish.
Thy will be done. We obey them in the grave. A dying scrawl. He took it to heart, pined away. Quiet brute. All men's dogs usually are.
A raindrop spat on his hat. He drew back and saw an instant of shower spray dots over the grey flags. Apart, curious, like through a colander.
I thought it would. My boots were creaking. I remember now.
The weather is changing, he said quietly.
A pity it did not keep up fine, Martin Cunningham said.
Wanted for the country, Mr. Power said. There's the sun again, coming out.
Mr. Dedalus, peering through his glasses towards the veiled sun, hurled a mute curse at the sky.
It's as uncertain as a child's bottom, he said.
We're off again. The carriage turned again its stiff wheels, and their trunks swayed gently. Martin Cunningham twirled more quickly the peak of his beard.
Tom Kiernan was immense last night, he said, and Paddy Leonard...